Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name's Barbara P. from Georgia and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, July 29th. Today we're reading from the Big Book and we are on the second paragraph on page 35. Our first example is a friend reading through one paragraph only. He came into contact with us. We'll end on that. Today's readers are Karen W. for the 12 Steps, Maura H., 12 Traditions, Rick J. will be kicking us off, Penny E. will be closing out the meeting, Judith S.P. is standing in the wings to help us out should we need it, and we've got more Karens waiting in the wings. We have our newcomer greeter, another Karen W., and our host, Karen K. So the reference numbers for yesterday, for Sunday, July 28th, special edition, 21609, should you want to hear that or hear it again. It's really good. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I'll now ask, let's ask Karen W. to kick us off with our 12 steps. Karen?
Good morning, everyone. This is Karen W. from Katy, Texas, compulsive overeater. Here are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to be of service, and I pass.
Thanks, Karen W. from Texas. And Maura H., would you read our 12 traditions?
Yes, thank you. This is Maura H. in New York. Good morning, everyone. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thanks so much. Maura H. from New York. So how our meeting works, our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Everyone is welcome. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today we're going to resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 35, second paragraph. Our first example is a friend. Just to the end of that paragraph, he came into contact with us. And Rick J., would you kick us off today?
Hey, good morning, Barbara, and thanks for your service. My name is Rick J. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable war record. He is a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is an intelligent man, normal so far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. This is one of my favorite stories in the Big Book. I just so relate with Jim. And, you know, that's the invitation, you know, when we are going through, reading, whether it's Bill's story or the examples about alcoholism or relapse, as I heard it recently said, is, you know, identifying in. And with me, on many levels, I could see myself living the life of Jim. I had a charming wife and family, and I, you know, had a career. I wasn't in, a world war, but, you know, I was in the military and, pretty popular with my friends, reasonably intelligent, I like to think anyway. And I did have a bit of a nervous disposition, you know, I could be a little bit edgy and, a little bit, emotionally glitchy, here and there, easily excitable. But, I had everything to live for, And here, we know that if we're looking at the type of thinking that's dominating an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink, as indicated in that previous paragraph, we're setting the stage here for what's to come. So we know that there's a relapse coming, and here he's getting to the asylum. He got drunk and then became violent in a short period of time when drinking, and ended up in an asylum. So when he leaves the asylum, he's probably in that perfect step one, you know, life unmanageable, powerless over alcohol. So he comes into contact, Bill and Bob and whoever's there to get in contact with. But he gets in contact with the people in AA. And from there, you know, we know he's going to get sober briefly anyway. And later on, we learn that he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And I think for me, that's what I relate to the most, even though this is a different paragraph. But I have to identify in and see where, you know, I can be at that point where I'm willing to go to any length to find recovery from food. And I'm desperate. And then that gift of desperation, I'm willing to do anything. And that is not enough. It's just not enough. That can keep me away from food for a while. But there's a lot more to this than just coming in and having that gift of desperation, being willing to go to any length, working step one, getting a sponsor, going to meetings. That's a great beginning, and that's necessary. But if I don't continue on, it's going to deep dive us into what we need to do to stay in recovery and to keep growing in recovery. All of these examples are going to give us ways that we can relapse if we're not careful. And I'm just so grateful to be absent today with all of you. With that, I pass.
Thanks, Rick J., for kicking us off. Although we value your experience. Oh, so we're going to now take 3-minute shares, and I'll go ahead and I'll be taking a list of names. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share important paragraph?
Lisa B. in Denver.
Got you, Lisa. Anybody else? All right, Lisa, go ahead and start us off, and everybody will be thinking about what they want to say.
Thank you so much for your service. This is Lisa B., Bravo in Denver, Colorado, and still recovering. Nervous disposition, you know, Jim's story is a lot like my own. You know, he started with a nervous disposition. Something so small, seemingly small, leads to such disaster. I can relate because, I've been a functional, high functioning drunk with the food and with some other addictions, and highly intelligent. And that intelligence, that combination has led me to this stubborn self-reliance bit of, it's been about Lisa reliance instead of God reliance all these years. And I have some other addictions that God guided me to take care of first that were killing me quicker than the food. And now the food is my last addiction. It's the oldest. I've always been able to lean on it or be something like a comfort net when I wasn't using my other drugs of choice. And, this whole idea of turning points, we stood at the turning point. I can identify several points in this story that I can relate to my own journey as far as, where does a relapse really begin? It doesn't begin at that first drink. It happens way before then, and it can start off, we're set up as addicts by being different and having that allergic reaction and having a nervous disposition or any kind of anxiety disorder can really lead us to wanting to numb out. So with that, I'm in. My name is Lisa B. from Colorado. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Lisa B. from Denver, Colorado. So who else would like to take a share this morning?
Just wondering what the paragraph is.
Oh, sure. We're on page 35, second paragraph. Our first example is a friend, and we're talking about Jim's story, and we're going.
Melanie P., Montreal.
I'm Lucy B. from West Virginia.
Sandy S. from Asheville, North Carolina.
Barbara, press star one.
Brona D. from Northern Ireland.
I'm sorry, got muted there. So, yeah, so we've got, I don't know if everyone heard me, so it's page 35, second paragraph. Our first example is a friend through that one paragraph, and I heard Melanie, Lisa B., and Sandy S. Did I miss anybody? Okay, let's go with those three. Okay, was that Rona?
Rona, yes, thank you.
Gotcha, Rona D. Okay, let's go with those four, Melanie, Lisa B., Sandy S., Rona D. Melanie, go ahead and kick us off from Montreal.
Elise N.
Okay, Elise, I'll add you to the list. Elise N., thanks. Go right ahead.
Did you say Melanie?
Melanie, can't hear you. You may have to start one again, too. Looks like we're our systems are being a little flaky this morning. Melanie?
Hi, do you hear me?
We can hear you now,
Melanie?
Yes. Yes, gotcha, good. Melanie P., thank you.
Hi, my name is Melanie P. from Montreal, Canada. I'm a compulsive overreader. And this paragraph really helped me this morning because I pick up on Saturday night and has many said previously that a relapse is not coming from the first bite, but way before. I didn't enlarge my spiritual life. I didn't took the time in the morning to connect with my higher power. And I related to this paragraph because I have everything. Outside, people can see that I have a house, I have a husband, I have a job, I have a family, everybody loves me, except myself. But I have everything. But what I'm missing here is a connection with my higher power. And this morning, I did what my sponsor told me, take 30 minutes on my knees to connect with this power, because it's not because I have everything in the world that I will recover. And yeah, lack of power is my dilemma, and I need to find this power desperately. That's what I had to share this morning, and I'll pass. Thanks.
Great. Thank you so much. Melanie P. from Montreal, Canada. Lisa B., step right up, and you'll be followed by Sandy S.
Good morning. I'm Lucy B. from Florida and West Virginia. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for your service. This part of the big book interests me so much because I was a chronic relapser for so long. And when I read this paragraph, what stands out to me are all these wonderful adjectives that described Jim: charming wife and family, lucrative automobile agency, commendable World War record, good salesman, intelligent. And then we get to nervous disposition. You know, it just strikes me that, again, we can have everything in our external world going so well for us, and yet, you know, it says earlier the baffling feature of alcoholism you know, as we know it, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or wish. You know, this paragraph and this section educating us about what happens before that first compulsive bite. I'm so grateful to have the information and know that everything in my external world can be going really well, but I have to take care of my inner life, like this book teaches me, in order to maintain my recovery. Thank you, everybody. I'll pass.
Great. Thanks so much, Lucy B. from Florida and West Virginia. Okay, Sandy S. from Asheville. Sandy, step right up. And you're going to be followed by Rona D.
Hi, this is Sandy S. from Asheville, North Carolina. I really don't relate to this paragraph, except nobody was speaking, so I thought I'd just chime in. I haven't spoken in a few days. Thank God I don't relate to this paragraph, because the problem was not the compulsive overeating. For me, the problem was I really hated myself, and that anger was so intense. You know, it was totally internal. You know, I always knew that there was nothing external that was going on. I just hated myself, started eating. And, you know, at a later time, I started when I was 12, and when I was 16, the only thing that calmed me down was eating. And I really was totally disintegrated, especially when I got into bulimia, because then there was nothing stopping the self-destruction. So I lost everything. First of all, I never had anything. I mean, that's what's so great. I never had anything in terms of a foundation of safety. The only thing I relate to is the nervous part. I wouldn't even say it was nervous. It was such an extreme state of agitation, and the only thing that helped was eating and throwing up. So I just want to say, when I had this spiritual experience, where I have no idea why I had it, the most important thing in my life, without exception, was this light. It just was amazing, and it was the only thing that really did something with that agitation. You know, I'm big into spirituality. I have to enlarge my spiritual life. I've been abstinent, I've shared 48 years in a couple of months. And, you know, food still calms me down. My abstinent food calms me down. I am so grateful to be desperate. I am desperate to continue a relationship with a higher power that a lot of times I don't even believe in, but I tell the truth. I think that's the foundation of my recovery. I tell my truth. I have no idea what the truth is. And I just wanted to share that all I want to do is be open to a higher power working in my life, because I am desperate for that, and I will be desperate until the day I die. And with that, I pass.
Well, thanks so much. Sandy S. from Asheville, North Carolina. Rona D., you're up, and then we're going to have Elise N., and then we'll be taking some more names. Let me just repeat where we are for anyone who came in. Page 35, second paragraph. Our first example is a friend, and it's through that one paragraph. So, Rona D., you're up.
Hi, my name's Brona. Brona is a B from County Armagh in Northern Ireland. And thank you for hearing me, for your time here. This is for coming into the program, that I find ways that people please to get everybody to like me, because that was my way of survival. I didn't know. I just thought, you know, if I can, I didn't even think about it. It just was instinct to give people what I thought they wanted, so I'd get what I needed. And that wasn't enough, because I still needed food in the middle of all of that. And the nervous disposition, I would describe it for me, and I used to describe it before coming to the program, it's like I bottled my feelings up and put them in a medicine cabinet, this image in my head. And then every once in a while, I'd open the medicine and there'd be no room for anything else. So the whole lot would come out and hit me. All the feelings, all the buildup of human emotion would come out and hit me all at once. And I'd need food. I'd need a lot of it. And I don't let anybody get in my way when I was trying to get at it. And coming down to the violence, you know, I didn't get violent in terms of attacking somebody physically, but verbally, absolutely. My family suffered, you know, the passive aggressive, slamming doors and, you know, not anything related to food, but people knew I had a problem with something. They didn't know that the issue was life and I couldn't live it. You know, they knew that there was something wrong and there was conversations when I wasn't there about it. I was like, I just didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to, but people on the street would say, oh yeah, perfectly good, you know, upstanding, but my family suffered in that regard. And it's a different story today. And that integrity of my insides matching my outsides, you know, being able to show up, being able to be a service with my family, to be being able to communicate clearly, to be honest with the program, people, please, I can be honest with you. I can't help you, or I'm not whatever it is, and just be honest, you know. And yeah, and life gets easier. Imagine, even though it can be painful at times, life gets easier, and I get more peace, and I get freedom. And luckily, I still get opportunities for learning growth. You know, I can still be here. So thank you for letting me share.
Oh, thanks so much. Brona B. from Ireland. Good to hear you. Elise N., you are up, and then we'll be taking another list of names. So Elise, please join us.
Hi, this is Elise N., and I did read the paragraph, and I kind of, now by now I forgot what it was. Hold on 1 second, I'm just going to... Right, I guess it's really about not drinking or not eating for a period of time and then drinking and really being out of control no matter what the wish is, no matter what the consequences are. And when I was eating, when my kids were home, I used to go out 1 a.m. and to get my fix at the drugstore. And I, one time, you know, it was either Christmas or New Year's and my 24-hour drugstore was closed. So I went into an area that was very dangerous with armed guards in the drugstore and bars and a lot of other addicts using a lot of other things in the area. And I went there to get my fix in the middle of the night. My kids were asleep. They weren't so young that they couldn't be alone, but really a very sick way to live, or, picking up, losing jobs because, you know, they would say you have to say where you're going when you leave or if you're going, and I wouldn't say. And it was, everything was all about the food, and it really ruled my life, and it ruined, you know, things about my job. It kept me out of touch with who I was, and I couldn't see whether I was at the top of my game at work or not, and I was like a clinical director. And it was very upsetting when I put it down to see I wasn't even sure what I turned in and what I didn't. And then I had to get in touch with it, realize I had done most of the work, and then I had to repair, you know, relationships around the work. And now I'm 59 and I'm starting a practice, you know, that I probably could have, if I hadn't been eating, maybe I could have started it, you know, 10 years ago. But that's it. That's okay, because that's what, you know, the way that I see things is that in God's world, things are exactly where they should be at the exact time that they are. And whatever I did to get here, that's what my journey was supposed to be, even though at the time, you know, the I had free will to do something else. So very grateful to be here and to listen to all of you and for this meeting still being alive and well for so many years. Thank you. Bye.
Elisa, and thanks so much. So now we have time. We can take another list of names. And please, if you've shared in the last couple of days, hold back so others can share.
Jackie A. from Connecticut.
Gotcha, Jackie. Heard somebody else try and come in. Jackie A. have. Just anybody else?
Tanya G.
Got you, Tanya.
Felicia D. in Rhode Island.
Alisa.
Dina D.
Dina.
John S., Maryland.
John, gotcha. Okay. Anybody else want to join this group? Great. If not, we will kick off. So, and we may have time for one or two more after. Jackie A. in Connecticut, Tanya G., Elisa D., Dina, and John S. So please, Jackie, come right up.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, moderator. Thank you, Mr. Rick J. And thank you, everybody on the line, for holding space and for sharing. I'm very blessed because the name Jim has blessed my life. One of my former sponsors has changed my idea of a higher power and also what recovery means. I can relate to Jim in that sense of being a hypocritical demise. I'm very grateful. I also work in addiction treatment. I work in the field of mental health, and I was using underneath everybody's eyes. My body was just deteriorating. I came into this program bleeding rectally, because I had been laxing for 8 years, and it still takes time for that to heal. You know, I'm very grateful if I'm walking or if I'm hiking that I don't defecate on myself when I'm out in public or pee myself. I'm very grateful to have my teeth. I never threw up. I just had bad teeth to start with. I'm very grateful that compulsive eating for me, unfortunately, because of the exercise bulimia and laxing, I never got up to a high weight. So I didn't have a lot to lose when I came into program with a meal plan. I'm beyond grateful that medication today keeps me from having those highs and lows. I have bipolar 1, and that used to be my food was my inoculator. My food was my, you know, my tranquilizer. And if I was mad, I needed to stuff myself so I would go into a coma. And if I was anxious, I needed to go run around circles or swim or go exercise in the middle of the night or go on hiking trips so that way I could get away from you because I didn't want you to see me vulnerable. And so I'm just very, very, very blessed by getting to hear the stories in the big book, having former sponsors from other programs as well that had a strong big book foundation able to take me through these chapters because I was like, I don't relate to this stuff like at all. And then they helped me. They helped me see where I showed up. So I'm going to hold space for everybody else. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks, Jackie A. from Connecticut. Tanya G., you're up. You'll be followed by Elisa D.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your service. Tanya G., grateful to be in recovery from Louisiana. I love this story. I could relate a long time ago. And I thought that if I just didn't, binge, this is back in, right before I found OA, when I was 19, I just thought that it would go away, seriously, you know, and I just couldn't imagine, like, what's going on? Why all of a sudden, after a week, quote unquote, I'm eating cookies for breakfast, you know, but I'm moderating, I'm controlling it, you know, then at the end, on the weekend, here I go on another binge. And that is over 30-something years. then I found OA, and I thought I could still control it. You know, that's what I get from this too, and that you know, even after, you know, Jim talks about that he did not drink for all this time, that like it was not going to be there. That's the insanity. My life did not look like Jim's. I can tell you, because when I am in the food, there is no life. There's no going to work. There's no nothing. I mean, it is all about the food. And it is a horrible way to live when I'm face down, lower than dirt. And I'm just so grateful for y'all saving my life in this big book that we read line by line, and that I wanted to go to treatment. I thought that was the end all be all. But, you know, y'all taught me that the big book is it. And that I never heard after all these years that the whole goal of the big book was to find a higher power. And I'm just so grateful I found these lines in other Zoom meetings. And yes, and to anyone that's new or returning, just keep coming back and surrender. As someone says, surrender, surrender, surrender. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Aw, thanks, Tanya G. from Louisiana. Alisa D., Rhode Island. Come on up.
Hi, this is Felicia D. with an F. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Sorry about that. Gotcha, Felicia.
Thank you so much. Felicia D. from Rhode Island, compulsive overeater. And for me, I think it's helpful when I look at this paragraph to think of, you know, how to identify and not compare, because I'm not a man. I didn't own an automobile agency. I wasn't the talk of the town when I came into Overeaters Anonymous. I mean, yes, it was 1991. I was 206 pounds and I was 21 years old. When I came back in 2022, I was 278 pounds. And that nervous disposition is what I can definitely identify with. And that to me is why it's so important that I have to do 10 steps, because I go through like a habit, a pattern of going through the steps and being connected to a sponsor and having some contact with a power greater than myself. But then I get through the steps and I haven't kept up with 10 steps, and that buildup of emotion and the nervousness. And then the way that I feel is intolerable, and then food becomes the solution. So for me, you know, I have to look at the fact that I am powerless over my nervous disposition, but there is a design in the 12 steps that gives me an opportunity to seek relief so that I don't have to have that build up and I don't have to return back to the food. And when I do that, every time I do that, when I look at 10, I look at 11, and I try to clear the debris of the day, it fills me with some connection, stronger connection to power, like how blessed I am that there's some plan that will save me on a daily basis, that this doesn't have to be my continued life, that I am not condemned to continuously relapse because I achieved X amount of relapses in the past, that every day is an opportunity for a new experience, and that God's not keeping score. And we'll do this search and rescue mission for me wherever I'm at. He's willing to meet me, and I'm just so grateful. Thank you so much, and I pass.
Yeah, thanks so much, Felicia D. Great reminder on the 10th step. And let me just remind everybody where we are. We are on page 35, second paragraph. Our first example is a friend reading that one paragraph. Dina, you are up, followed by John S. Dina, star
Hi.
One?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go.
It took me a minute to figure out how to do it. I'm sorry, my phone. This is my first time. I'm Dina D. I'm from Indianapolis. It's my first time that I'm sharing. I've been listening to the meeting for about, maybe a month or so. The reason why I chose to share today is because I, you know, on the outside, my life seemed very normal. And I bought, by the way, I bought into the idea that my life is normal because I was really overly functioning in so many areas. But inside, I was dying, and the food was always there as a crutch to help me get through the day. And I've done a lot of things with food, and I, you know, it was really, I mean, terrible things. I am still struggling, and that's why I'm talking today. I'm still struggling. I'm very much like I can be abstinent for a couple of weeks, and then I will have a relapse, and I can be abstinent for a couple of weeks, and then I'll have a relapse. And I've done OA for about 2 years now in different programs, and that's been the case. And I'm not, I haven't been able to be consistent, and that's why I'm just sharing today. And thank you all for listening to me. I appreciate all of your shares.
So glad you stepped up. And is it Dina or Gina? Just want to make sure we have your name right so people can find you on the list. Dina. Okay, great. I did get it. So in Indiana. Great. Great. Good for you. Good courage to step up. All right. John S. from Maryland. And then just star one to mute. Yep. Just John, star one to unmute.
Hi, this is John S. from Eastern Shore, Maryland. Here today, really... because I came to this morning after speaking with my sponsor to realize just how important honesty in the program is. That honesty has taken, for me, a long time to accept. The personal inventory of things that I've done in the past that were wrong, and the honesty to my food plan or to my intake throughout the day has really summed up this morning for me what I need to do. And to others that are out there, I can tell you I've been in program for almost 15 months, and I know for a fact I could be a lot further ahead in my goal if I was more honest with myself earlier in the program. Taking that inventory of yourself, things that you've done in the past, you can't redo. There's no mulligans in this. But going forward is where your honesty has to kick in. At least I know for myself, has to kick in to where I am honest throughout the day and the evening on what I consume, what exercises and what activities I do perform. And that honesty goes past the food. It goes into your life, being honest with yourself. If it's not there, it's not going to work for you. And I'm just glad and I'm grateful for my sponsor to bringing it to my attention this early in my recovery. And I wish others good luck in your recovery. That's it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, John S. For my good shares this morning. You guys rock. So we are on page 35, second paragraph. Our first example is a friend. And just talking about that one paragraph, who else? I think we can do at least three, maybe four. I don't know.
Laura L.
Patrick L.
Laura. Patrick.
Dina A. New Jersey.
Who A? Was that Maura?
Dina.
Dina?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. So I've got Laura L, Patrick O, Dina A. Well, let's try for those three, and then we'll see if we have another minute or two. Laura L, you go right ahead.
Thank you so much, moderator. Thank you, everybody, for your service this morning. I'm Laura L. I'm from Connecticut, and I just really appreciate that we go through each paragraph like this every day. So grateful. I'm not like Jim in a lot of ways, but I am in a lot of ways. I looked up nervous, and it says easily agitated, alarmed, anxious, highly strung, which I think anxious is my middle name, actually. But yeah, I came into program for the first time when I was 23 and then left and didn't go back until I was 41. And the reason was I was so scared when I walked into that meeting because I saw somebody I know, and that fear of that anxiety of somebody else knowing about me that I didn't want anybody that I knew to know scared me so much that I just turned off to OA or doing anything to help myself with my compulsive eating. And so my disease progressed from grazing to binging to purging of all different sorts, from exercise bulimia to throwing up and then to spitting out and then to spitting out and throwing up. The self-hatred and the self-loathing grew. And sort of like Jim, I exhibited a semi-normal exterior in terms of, you know, I worked very hard and I was, you know, doing good work. And I had friends, but not, you know, but I had trouble in relationships, but I didn't realize it, actually. I thought it was everybody else's fault. But inside, I was screaming and crying and so anxious. I had developed at a young age horrible insomnia, which debilitated me for years and still does. And I was just walking around terrified of what people thought of me, of people thinking I was really ugly and fat, and that's what I thought I was. And I was 60 or 70 pounds heavier than I am now, but I thought I was the only person on the planet who did these horrible things to my body and with food. And and it got worse and worse, and I got worse and worse. And in terms of the violence, I was a rageful, really, really rageful young woman from a lot of the conditions of growing up and trauma. And so I was verbally violent towards myself and towards others. And I didn't even know what abuse was then, but I'm sure I would rise to that at some point. And I know I pushed somebody once, and you know, I was just like, I had those tendencies that could just come out. But thank you very much, and I'll pass.
Oh, thanks, Laura L. from Connecticut. Patrick O., you are up for three.
Hello, this is Patrick from Tennessee, currently in New Jersey. I wanted to just say hello and speak up. I haven't done it for a little while. First thing that I want to talk about is a friend. I'm so grateful to have all the people in my life in recovery as part of my support group. And I go to another program. They use the term fellow traveler, and I really like that. So I'm really, really, really grateful for that. Just the word friend. And when I'm in my disease and in my addiction, I'm so isolated, and I think I've heard it said that the opposite of addiction is connection. So that's the first thing that jumped out. And then the other thing is the list of the anxiety. You know, I would add the word ashamed. I deal with shame a lot. Through this process of getting abstinent and then working the steps with my sponsor and making amends, there was a couple of amends I went to make. And they were really based in shame about past behavior that I thought I did. And two of the people literally like stopped me in the midst of this, the amends, and said, Patrick, you don't owe us an amends at all. And they kind of reflecting back to me, you know, some of the things I did. And it just was just really just made me aware of how I internalize my shame and my faults, and it's all my fault and stuff like that. And so I'm really grateful for that. And in this past couple of days, in regards to that, I've been one with some family members that were part of on that list, that it was it was not really there, and I'm so grateful for that. And then another was I had a conversation with one of the other people, and he again, there's a situation where I might end up being, anyway, he just, it was just an amazing conversation. I'm just so grateful for that, and it's just because of this, working through the steps again. And then with my mother, I am just aware, she made a comment recently about something I don't do good enough, quote unquote. And my internal reaction was like, and I just said, and then I said, well, how important is it? Let live and live. But it's definitely there, and it's something I probably need to do some writing about. And it's about, I'm just that kind of that nothing I do is good enough. And it's just, but it's not a big, you know, let it go, you know. And but again, I'm so grateful I don't have to eat over it. I can work the steps through it. I can talk to people about it, which I already have. So I'm grateful for all these experiences, and I will keep coming back, and I'm grateful to be here this morning, and thank you.
Great. Thanks, Patrick O. from Tennessee and in New Jersey today, and Dina A. in New Jersey.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, everybody, for being on. Dina A. from New Jersey, gratefully recovered, compulsive eater. Interesting, when I first heard this paragraph this morning, I was like, I'm here on live, I could share, but I don't have something to share on this paragraph. And I'm listening to all the shares. My goodness, do I have something to share on this paragraph. So thank you, everybody. I so identify with the first part of this paragraph where Jim has a charming wife, a family, a job. He's intelligent. He hasn't even been drinking yet, but he's got that nervous disposition. Now, I heard about OA 10 years before I joined, and I thought, like, the family member I knew who joined, I was like, wow, there's so much. I saw what recovery looked like emotionally and spiritually, and I was like, that's just the kind of program I would love. Too bad I'm not a compulsive eater, because that would be amazing for me. And then when I came into program with, like 15 pounds to lose after having like clawed my way down a few pounds on my own without program. My sponsor at that time, that my first sponsor said, wow, you've got the highest bottom of anybody I've ever known. And I walked around like pretty cocky for a couple years there, like, yeah, I have the highest bottom. And now recently working my program through Vision and just hearing all your shares and identifying with every, you know, hell opened up before me, you know, hearing where people were before program. And I was like, you know what? I did not come in with a high bottom. I came in just as low. My inner world was a little, whatever this says, violent, very violent in my inner world towards myself. That nervous disposition that I never would have named. I named it this year, that I suffer from anxiety and that I've suffered from anxiety since I was a tiny little girl. But I didn't give that to myself or name it for myself. And there was always that shame, that not good enough, that what are people going to think, that hiding, when am I going to get discovered? Somebody's going to look over their shoulder and say, what's she doing here on this planet? Like, she doesn't deserve to breathe the air. And yet I was living the first part of the paragraph. Great family, great everything, overachieving in a lot of areas, probably also like a lot mixed in with the anxiety. And so for the first lot of years of my life, it may not have shown, but there I was, and I'm just so grateful for this program. I said when I came in and I didn't understand what I was saying after like a year or so in program and still grappling with, am I a compulsive eater or am I not a compulsive eater? Thankfully, I'm past that dilemma. But I said, you know what? I must be, because this program is answering every question I've ever held in my life. So I said, it's answering all my problems. It's answering my whole life. So I must be holding the question if this is my answer. And today I know that 100%. And so just again, so grateful for this program. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Well, thanks, Dina A. in New Jersey. And Dina will be our last share of the morning. So thank you to everyone who shared today. Such rich shares. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following this closing. Today's share ID is 21610. The let me just verify that. Bear with me one moment. Yep, 21610 for today's meeting. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Penny E. read A Vision for You, starting with, our book is meant to be suggestive only through keep you until then.
Yes, thank you. Penny E. recovered in South Jersey. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. Excuse me. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.